Okay,
wishing you good life.
Quick way.
Yo, weakses.
Tanet e. Negat dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Okay, nistuni tani kuna tu ipi ta numkhtu to tatsaki tapi. Nisto siksi keksi tapi. Nitse tapi. Welcome to Words and Culture. I'm your host, Eugene Braverock. Well, this is it, the final episode of the Blackfoot episodes. So thankful and blessed to have the opportunity to go home and share time and space with my elders, to listen, not just with my ears, but with my spirit. Every word they share isn't just a story. It's memory, it's identity, it's life itself being passed forward. Through this project and the Yuki Language Project, which I am a founder of, these moments become something more than moments. They become medicine. They become a bridge between where we've been and where we're going. I don't take that lightly. To sit, to learn, to carry, and to share, that is responsibility. That is honor. That is everything.
Well, first, I'll introduce myself. Istoan na ko ka matskukito na aksa ni tenepska api kani matasta na jinska asusong mitskas ang sino kaya no kuchitska buki kaya ni uks ni che uks ni tukan ni siwa. Kamu no arts to any kiki see books. Six gates at the pure. On stay with you. Machi chitziwa chav kaki ni. Ni che books. Kaina wa no patsits usu man stay. Skapi pikani. A patsi pikani. Okay, kissik kawa. No kate na kuki. Kenya look down noots pinna nakia. Aso kanya amo man stay ko ipa ki siksikay ko ke amo man stay ko ipa kay na ke abskapi pikani so man stay si machi chichiwa chani chi umi man sa skini mas katu pa an iksay ko sa pitak sa chawa misto na kay nukay supuya pa itsi. Kaya pa kaya siksikay ko kasi nga kikin niya niya ito niya niya na stay. Okay, di matas ni pa kaya niya ko kasi. Ska pipika ni kipika ni taon ni. Ni taon ni. Ha ka kumansas ka ni matso katupo awan ka. Iksay ko sa pia. Tagstam sa awan. Miskawaso kutumya ni po kasi niya. Okay, stun na to tutama piwaki. Ako kasi ni sa akin. Ni tayo po yun. Tsaka kanu susta pizzi na tuwa. Asa kay ta pizzi ni ksisi. Kamsa iskiniki. Nakaiso po yapa itsi. Ay, iskay eksim maka. Ikuma kay ta piya mukse. Ay, matumi akanayo kits ta piman stay po yun. Okay, ni kaya tau tati maya. Ni tei kuya wa ni siksa api kuya. Ni kaya mati tsi wa ayi mati ya uksi spayi kuya kman stay kuya. Ken ska e siksa o kuya tsi. Matuk piwa ki stunu ki paeta pi sinaka ayi matuk stuk kits. Amuksi maani tapiksa ki asi tapiksa puka eksi. Matas kini mea manis kistunu na ni daapstun na zi ayaa kutspa ni tzipa etapi ni kua ka etapi ayi makkia kenste matas kini mea okki kia otaksa matissa na ki ni daapstun na tuutu tama miwa ki akas kini kisi ni teipu ni tzipu. Okay, it's a happy. But I want to speak English just to kind of translate what I said. I talked about the importance of our language, knowing about, you know, understanding. I started off by introducing myself. My name, he wrote back, that's my name, Mats Kintoki. My great-great-grandfather, Bobtail Chief, named me that. He died in 1963, so it was about a year and a half just before he died, when he gave me that name. And that was from a war exploit he had against the Crees. His other name was Nitanabs, clone medicine fighter. He also knew him as Api Kan, Stabby Road. And then Tsisi Oktilchi. But that old man was the one that named me. That's when he raided the Crows and took some horses. But the reason why he called me, he rode back, was when he was chasing those horses out of that Crow camp, he saw a gray horse tied to a lodge. So he swung around and rode back down the trail. And the Crows were attacking. He rode through them and cut that horse loose from that teepee. That was that man's prized horse. Jumped on that gray horse, really fast horse. He ran back through them again. And they couldn't hit it. They were shooting and everything. They couldn't hit it. And that gray horse, he rode it into camp, pushing with other horses that he had taken from the Crow. So my dad was given the name Gray Horse Rider because of that. It wasn't, had nothing to do with Akukatsuma, Novitskina, because of that. I got the name he wrote back because of what he did. And I believe in that name because, you know, in my career, I've been shot at, I've been a lot of things, but I've never been hit with a bullet. They've gone by my head, they've shot my mic right off my shoulder, everything, but I was never hit. You know, the significance of it was that, you know, it was a warrior name, and that's something that a lot of people don't understand because, and that's what I talked about in my Blackfoot. I talked about how our young people, these young kids, seem to emulate other cultures and never really looked at what our culture is about. So, I mean, we see a lot of these, this emulation of other cultures. And they never stopped to realize that the Blackfoot Confederacy, the Blackfoot culture. No matter where I go, I can say I'm from the Bloods of a Blood Indian because I was born there. But wherever I go with other cultures in the world, in the Indian world, they never call me a North Blackfoot or Hagan or anything. They always call me Blackfoot. Because well, that's who we all are, the Blackfoot Confederacy. Just that we gave ourselves labels later on. That's the word for Bloods or Akaine. Yeah. You know, that was the word, but the translator got it wrong when he used that term because Apau means those weasels, those white ermines. And the Bloods at that time always wore the white buckskin weasel tail suits. And they said, yeah, well, it is actually kind of, you know, it's like a, you know, ermine skin, you know, like a weasel. They just look at them, they just, you know, glow in the sun, they're white. So that's the term. Somebody mistranslated and said they're Blood Indians. But it could be another term where, because of, you know, all Blackfoot, and most notably the Bloods, were very proud, so they would spill blood pretty quick, eh? That's one of the theories, but the main story I kind of start to believe is that it's supposed to mean the weasel tail people, you know, the weasel people, right? So, I mean, when we look at it that way, you know, that was a mistranslation. But you see a lot of these young people, they don't understand, you know, the importance of language. Language is important, and that's what I said when I said it in the Blackfoot, our language. When I was going to university, taking ethnology and anthropology, one of the things was the language component. They talked about the fact that when a language is lost, the worldview is lost. Mm-hmm. We lose who we are. You can never fully comprehend or understand the ceremonies unless you know the language. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference. And people don't understand that, or they don't appreciate the importance. What impresses me the most is when I see these young people addressing, like that young girl that addressed the UN on water. Mm-hmm. She spoke in Anishinaabe, but that's how she started. And then she talked about it. Mm-hmm. And she made more of a valid point. But they didn't give her the exposure she needed. Yet, you know, she should have gotten the Nobel Prize in mm-hmm. environment. But then a white girl by the name of Greta Thunberg comes up there, and all she does is make faces and tell these politicians, how dare you? If it was a native girl that said that, they probably would have had her handcuffed and tossed out. But they didn't do that for her. It's all about optics. And with our own people, you know, sometimes we have to put ourselves in those optics, but push the language.
So you said that we lose that worldview, or we lose that, our worldview with our language, yeah. Right? So what are some words that right now, I mean, I'm curious, I know a couple words, but we can't explain them in English.
No.
Did you know a couple of those words? Like,
well, there's words that it's really hard to explain. It all depends on the context you use them. Mm-hmm. You know, boy, that's huawa. Igupuwapsi, that person, igupuwapsi, meaning they're very mean. They're very, they're like, you know, cruel. And buwayi taksin is, for lack of a term, it's more like to think in a cruel way, to think in a very negative way. That's one word, but yet, you know, it has so much meaning because it's used in so many different applications and contexts. Mm-hmm. That
it changes.
Yeah, it changes. And that's what people need to start understanding. And they need to really, really work at, again, the optics.
Mm-hmm. I was sitting with Dale Lowhorn.
Yeah.
And I asked him, we're talking about optics and how we're translating or how we're taking it in. So even the word okki, I said, how come okki sounds like okki? What is the meaning? Why is there a connection?
Yeah.
He said, well, okki, that's water, because that's what gives life.
Yeah.
So when you're saying okki, you're wishing them good life. It's not hello.
No.
Nowadays, that's what hello translates to, right?
Yeah. That's an old term, okki. You know, and that's what it means, to give life. And even me, when I'm not catching myself talking like the old guys from old times, you know, okay, again, that word, it's hard to translate because it's used as an opening. It's used as something, you know, you're giving life to this conversation when they say that. At least that's my thought. You know, like anything else, there's always going to be somebody out there, that rock scout, he's cool. But I don't care. I know what I say. I know, you know, and I know what I have and where I can look at things. You know, even the term Shikapistan, they think it means black, but it's not. It's when you take things and you put them all together and you tie them up.
Mm.
And then you give them to someone. You're giving it away. Then they're not as Shikapist. You know, that's my offerings. That's what I gave. But yet at the same time, another word, it gets stuck. When you put it up, when you make an offer, it's the same thing, but two different things. One is to give, to get something, and the other one is you put it up for nabinatusi. So, but they both mean the same thing.
Mm.
You look at these different values and how things are put together, but bottom line is that eventually people are not going to know it anymore. They're not going to understand it. Every time we lose an old time, we lose just that much more of our people. And pretty soon, we're going to be like some of these other cultures who had to reinvent themselves. Because in their foolishness or in their effort to gain, to be accepted and to fit in a white world, we sacrificed our culture and our language.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we have to pull them back. The impression I got when people were, even during elections, you know, all they talked about was, oh, we're going to get this, we're going to get this, you know, we're this rich. Yeah. But someday, you know, the international monetary system could collapse. And that $1.8 billion that people like my tribe has, it's going to be just a pile of paper.
Mm.
And I've heard people say, you know, the power of... This one guy kept saying, oh, yeah, I gave this much offerings, I gave this much, and I gave this much. I remember this one guy said, well, I couldn't give much, but I gave what I had.
Mm.
He said, but I don't look at how much money it is, he said. What I look at is, these prayers are going to last me for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
They'll always be there for me. And I've dealt with elders who say the same thing. Blankets wear out, horses get old and die. Money you spend. Tobacco, well, I don't smoke, so I give it away.
Mm.
I offer it, you know, do all these things. But the prayers will last me for the rest of my life. That's a worldview. And some of these guys don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see more and more immersion schools, like what Bikani did, Amskabi Bikani did with the Cutswood School.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen it bring second language learners to the point of almost first language speakers.
Yep.
And now they're teaching it, right? And
yep.
I mean, that's the only way. From another elder I heard of that, Enkshe told me, he said, the only way we're going to learn it is in the home. If you know something in the home, don't ever say it in English.
Yep.
Say it in the home, say it in our language.
Well, you know, when I first went to school, residential school, I didn't speak English. I only spoke black.
Mm.
My grandparents didn't speak English. My grandmother was hidden from the missionaries in the early 1900s. So she never went to school. My grandfather did, but he told me all they did was work. But he could read and write.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at home, I never heard any English. I didn't even know what English was.
Mm.
Growing up, I remember you could count on one hand our peers that didn't speak Blackfoot.
Mm.
And even smaller percentage, maybe one figure on one hand, where these ones didn't speak or understand. And that's why I think language work, immersion schools, that's what's going to work for us. But not going with that white concept, that Indian Affairs concept of, well, if this person's going to be teaching the black language, he has to have a piece of paper that says he's an expert.
Mm.
It's sort of like when I applied for a job years ago with
When I first got out of police and I applied for a job with the cultural department, and I got a nice little form letter saying, you failed to meet the academic requirements for this job. The guy they hired at the time, he didn't last very long. He asked me about what I know about Black culture. I said, well, I was in the horns. I owned about 12 bundles, you know, beaver bundle, medicine pipe. I've been part of all of that. I grew up with it. I'm an elder for the Multitude Geeks. I do all these different things. And then, they asked me, how's your knowledge of the Blackfoot language? And I said, I probably speak it better than anybody in here. Because most of the people interviewing me couldn't speak Blackfoot.
Mm-hmm.
One guy said, I don't think so. I said, well, I was raised by my grandparents. Mm-hmm. They didn't speak English. What do you know about Blackfoot culture? Was that from a horn society? I owned other bundles? I said, I grew up in ceremony, and I know all the plants and their names. So, yeah, I think I know a little bit. But anyways, I get this. So I go back to university. I took my International Indigenous Studies at the University of Calgary. And I remember my professor taking me aside one day. I thought I was in trouble. I had a meeting with him. And the first thing he asked me is, why are you in my class? And again, I took it as a negative. I said, because I need it. He said, don't be offended. He said, but I don't think you need to be in this class. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you could teach it. And then he said, why are you in this class? I said, well, I applied for a job working in culture on my reserve.
Mm.
And they gave me a nice little form letter that said, I need a piece of paper from a recognized white institute that says I'm an expert in Black culture. And he rolled his eyes. So colonial thinking and colonization has permeated every aspect of our people. And even Blackfoot speakers, they need to decolonize.
Mm-hmm.
They need to more or less go through gotta cleanse that, the whitewashing, and cleanse it off of them so that they can start thinking and appreciating who we are.
That was Elder Rod Scout, who was born on the Blood Reserve in 1959 and raised by his grandparents, who spoke only Blackfoot. Immersed from childhood in our people's language, ceremonies, and teachings, he grew up grounded in a deep respect for the land and the traditional way of knowing. If you want to know more about the Blackfoot language, check out the Ukki Language Project with me. Next time on Words and Culture, I'm handing the talking stick over to Shaneen Robinson, who will take us into Gitxsan country. Before I go, I want to leave you with the song by The North Sound. They are a husband and wife duo led by Blackfoot singer Forrest Eagle Speaker. His wife is Nevada. This is Better Days. I'm Eugene Braverock. G'day Agadamatsin.
I hit the ground running. I've been to hell and back. I've had my loved ones taken and I feel my spirit crack. I tried to find salvation in crowded rowdy rooms. Smiling through the pain and washed my sorrows down with booze. And I don't sure what changed. When the devil comes a knocking, I turn the other way. And I'm doing better these days. Never thought I'd ever make it to see this age. Through the fire and through the rain, felt the same old way. Enough is enough, gotta get back up and hold on to see those better days. I climbed the mountain, fought a raging sea. I tried to lose myself, but couldn't get away from me. I've got a lovely family, and I made lots of mistakes, but I've turned around since yesterday, so I'm innocent today. Some of us just need to get lost before we're found. And I'm doing better these days. Never thought I'd ever make it to see this age. Through the fire and through the rain, I felt the same old way. Enough is enough, gotta get back up. Hold on to see those better days. Oh. And we all want the answers, and we all want them now. Only time will tell, and that's okay. Time will tell, and that's okay. I'm doing better these days.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Amia.
Yami.
Halakasla!
Gitaya kitamatunukua. We'll see you later.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Every listener matters, and we're here because of listeners like you. Thank you for all your support.
This is Bird Note. We often think of birds migrating south in the fall, but many species kick off their big trips surprisingly early in the year. Shorebirds nesting in the Arctic tundra are an extreme example. Birds like this American golden plover have a small window of time to build a nest, find a mate, and lay eggs in the short Arctic growing season. Golden plovers actually leave their juvenile young behind to begin flying south in mid-summer. But don't worry. At that point, the juveniles are already taking care of themselves and can find their own way to South America later in the year. What that means for people living below the Arctic Circle in North America is that shorebirds begin reappearing on beaches, mudflats, and grasslands in July and August. Unlike the rapid flight north in the spring, shorebirds take their time in the fall, following the weather patterns and stopping for a while when they find a good spot for food. So for shorebirds, it's like summer's over as soon as it began. Another way to look at it? Every month of the year has a big event for birds' life cycles, and there's always something new for us to witness. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
Renaissance Coffee is open at SFU. Parminder and his team have been serving the SFU community with great coffee for more than 20 years. If you're looking for a wholesome meal, delectable desserts, or something to warm yourself and lift your spirits, Renaissance Cafe is the place to be. Featuring fair trade espresso beverages and brewed coffee, Renaissance Coffee is open Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Well, how do you get up and go?